But let's head to the classroom, where the Finnish seem to be doing things very differently, flying in the face of the educational reforms in many other countries, including our own, where standardised testing, core subjects and competition seem to dominate. Equality of opportunity for all children, regardless. That's the lofty goal of the Finns, as it was for the Gonski Review into School Funding in Australia, released last week, of course. Now, Finland has a higher proportion of public schools than any other OECD nation, and they've been ranked at or near the top in what's called the Program for International Student Assessment for over a decade. Although that wasn't their aim when they started their education reforms 40 years ago. Equity was. And OECD research shows equity and performance are strongly linked when it comes to education. And while some argue comparisons between a small, wealthy country like Finland with culturally and socioeconomically diverse countries like our own are impossible to make. But Dr. Pasi Sahlberg thinks the story of his own small Nordic nation has something to offer. His new book is Finnish Lessons, What Can the World Learn from Educational Change in Finland? This is a man who's got teaching in his blood, the child of two teachers, a former teacher himself, now a government official with the Finnish Ministry of Education. He's held posts with the World Bank and the European Commission. Pasi Sahlberg, welcome to ABC Radio National.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's get to the heart of the secret, Pasi. Give us a snapshot of the Finnish education system in terms of a child's engagement with it. For example, I gather children don't begin school until they're seven.
That's right. And first of all, I would like to say that there is not really a secret there. This is a common mistake that many people have when they come to Finland or read about Finland. They think that there is a kind of a secret silver bullet to make things work. I think the story really is that there's a lot of common sense in what we have been doing in terms of making sure that everybody, all the children who come to school, that they are healthy and happy and well taken care of. That's why our early years of primary school, when the school starts at the age of seven, focus much more on well-being of children and providing help to those individuals who need more help.
Why start school so late, Pasi?
I don't know. You know, Finnish parents really believe, and being parent myself, I'm one of those who believe that letting children play and enjoy life and do the things that they want to do as long as possible is better than placing them in the institutions where they by definition have to do things that somebody else has decided for them to do. And majority of Finnish parents think exactly like this, that the what we call the extended childhood is better than too early institutionalization of young people. And it seems to be working because, you know, if you take the 15-year-old Finn, he or she has about 4 years less formal schooling behind him or her compared to the Australian peers. Mm. So it's a huge difference, but we can still perform in a similar way academically.
A big difference, and this is the paradox at the heart of the Finnish approach to education, isn't it? That in fact less is more, and it seems to me that this applies on a number of fronts. So students and teachers are spending considerably less time at school in Finland than they do here. What's the rationale there?
I think this probably just represents the core idea of what learning is all about. First of all, learning is not the same as teaching, like many people seem to think. When they use the increased curriculum or increased teaching and learning time as a kind of a medicine for performance that is not where it should be. Mm. You know, we do many things in Finland, not only in education, but in life in general, in a kind of a minimalistic way. If you look at the Finnish architecture or design, it's the same thing, that we love small, simple things. And it's the same thing in doing education or helping children to learn, is that we believe in small things and doing them well. Whatever we do, we try to do as well as we can, and then the rest is something else.
Well, teachers typically spend about 4 hours a day in the classroom, and I gather they're paid to spend 2 hours a week on professional development, which in the Australian context is pretty extraordinary. And I imagine that Australian educators would be inclined to ask, well, surely that's not enough contact hours to get through a curriculum.
Yeah, but this is where we disagree with many, many others. And sometimes we even disagree among ourselves about this this thing. And the paradox really is that we are able to produce internationally high academic results by really doing a little. And you didn't mention the homework or lack of private tutoring and private like after-school activities that many other countries have. We don't have any of those. So Finnish children don't really pay too much attention to doing homework, which is another addition to this paradox.
Now, this is extraordinary. And if people are listening with their kids in the car, you might want to get them to put their hands over their ears.
Right.
Because you don't do homework. In fact, you don't prescribe testing until well into the teens, I think even 16. Why is that?
We only have one standardized external examination, which is the right in the end of the upper secondary school, when most of our students are 18 or 19 years old. So these people never experience any standardized assessments or tests before. You know, the simple reason is that we, first of all, we well recognize the difficulties and the unintended consequences of standardized testing, meaning that there will be more teaching to the test and narrowing curriculum and focus on these core subjects that go all against the what we believe in education in Finland. And secondly, since we have highly regarded and highly respected the teachers in our schools, we also rely on their assessment and judgment and reporting how the students and pupils are doing in the school, both to parents and to the authorities.
We'll just come back to testing in a minute, but you mentioned teachers being held in high esteem. This really does, Pasi, appear to be one of the centrepieces of the Finnish system. So forget medicine and law. Teaching is an incredibly highly contested profession. How on earth did you manage that? Because they're not actually necessarily paid much more than teachers in other Western countries.
Yeah, that's true. I think we have really tried hard to make teaching look like you were practicing medicine or law or architecture or something like this, where we understand that if we want to have high professionals as teachers, they need to have autonomy and space and freedom to operate and use this knowledge and skills that their academic research-based training is offering them. Unfortunately, many countries, this is not the case, where teachers have to follow instructions and directions from elsewhere. And more than that, teachers are also controlled and inspected and assessed and judged also by these external measures.
Part of the standardized testing approach is as much about testing kids as it is about testing teacher performance, isn't it?
Exactly, and increasingly these standardized tests are actually measuring schools and performance of teachers, and this is not really what we should be doing.
This is Life Matters on Radio National, and we're talking about the Finnish education system, which sounds sort of almost utopian. I'm talking to Dr. Pasi Sahlberg, who's in Australia at the moment at a national education conference. Pasi, what about curriculum? There's been a very active conversation about developing a national curriculum in Australia. What's the Finnish approach to curriculum and, I guess, the whole complex discussion about core subjects and standardising those subjects across a nation?
Mm. I think it's, first of all, I think it's a good idea to have some sort of national or federal unity in terms of the curriculum. How Finland is doing this is that we don't have any national standards or any kind of a fixed specification what exactly teachers should be teaching. We have a national framework curriculum that is a kind of a broad set of standards and principles for schools and teachers to design and work out their own curriculum. And so the main logic in the Finnish steering system for education is to encourage every school to work out their own curriculum based on these national guidelines. And I think this is one, you know, if there are any secrets or any tricks that we have been able to do, this is one of them, that we have, as soon as you have good teachers in service like you have here in Australia, you can get much out of your education system if you let them, these professionals, also to tell you how teaching and learning should be organized. I think Finland would never be here where we are now if we had had more centrally controlled curriculum where the teachers' own professional judgment would have been limited.
I mean, speaking of good teachers, at the University of Helsinki where you teach, I think it was upwards of 2,500 people competing last year for 120 fully subsidised slots in your master's program for school teachers. This is how competitive teaching is.
It is very competitive, and it has been so now for the last two decades or something like this. By the way, among these 2,500 applicants last year, there's one of the accepted students was there for the seventh time to try to get into the teaching. And this is how much some people really want to be teachers. And, you know, fortunately, Finland has this privilege that we can cherry pick the best of the best and most committed young people to teaching. And therefore, we don't really have this problem or issue that many other countries have about so-called bad teachers. We employ a very strict quality control at the entry into teaching profession, into training already. So it's very, very unlikely that there will be anybody in service who would be graduating and accepted to teach who could be labelled as a bad or poor teacher.
At the heart of this whole ethos, which has been developing over 40 years, really since post-World War II, hasn't it? There seems to be a core value here of cultivating natural curiosity in the classroom. And, you know, often curriculum design can kind of design that out, can't it? How has Finland managed to hang on to that ethos?
Well, this is exactly why we have this curriculum system that we have now, where the most important part of the curriculum design is done by teachers and principals and the communities. So we leave it up to the teaching community to decide how they want to design the work of the school. If they have more capacity within their own schools or in their own communities to have more creative and open and modern ways of organizing schooling, everything is possible within this framework. So that's why we don't really think that we could run our education system with the more centrally controlled curriculum content and the ways teaching should be organised.
Well, that's interesting because it seems to me that there is a whole of community approach in the Finnish system. So rather than a kind of top-down approach, in fact, you encourage different schools and their teachers and indeed families to get together and collaborate together. There's the so-called Aquarium Project, which has had quite an impact. What's that?
Well, this was the important initiative in 1990s where we tried to do exactly what you mentioned, that to drive the educational improvement and development through networking and collaboration and communities rather than competition. We have to remember that exactly the same time in the 1990s when we did this, in most other countries, competition was the driving idea and rewarding individual teachers and schools for their high performance, which we saw, I remember that time, very problematic because we understood that as soon as you give rewards for individuals or individual schools for performance, you are making collaboration and networking, sharing of ideas very complicated. And we were lucky to be able to understand this, and that's why we are here again.
Parsi, where do private schools fit into the picture? Certainly, you have predominantly a public school system, I gather, but where do private schools families paying for their education fit into the story?
No, we don't have private schools. You cannot pay for education in Finland. It's considered as a human basic right in our constitution for everybody, so it's illegal to charge fees for education that is leading to a degree or qualification. So we don't have any private school, any chance that parents could pay. We have a very small number of what we call independent schools, like language schools or Waldorf schools or something like this, but they're all within the public financing system, and no school can ever charge any tuition fees from parents.
Critics argue here, therefore, that Finland really is an exception that it doesn't lend itself to comparison, saying that education outcomes are emerging from a largely homogenous population of only 5.5 million people. Your poverty rate is low compared to much larger, more diverse populations and economies. So really you are an exception to the rule. Are you?
We are exception to the rule for sure, and I would say that the more important characteristics of the country were not mentioned in your description there. Of course, the low level of immigration and low level of child poverty, they are important things to be considered. But as a researcher myself and with my colleagues, international colleagues including, none of these factors can alone explain this extraordinary high performance. But I think what people often don't get is that Finland is indeed a different country. We are thinking about our education very differently to many others, starting from the idea that the key thing for the Finns is to make sure that we have equitable education system, not necessarily excellent in terms of academic performance. And that's why this well-being and happiness idea in a school is something that distinguishes Finnish way of thinking from many others.
Sounds totally blissful to me. You have written a book, Finnish Lessons, What Can the World Learn from Educational Change in Finland? And as you travel around the world, and as you're here in Australia, what can we learn? I mean, I guess people here would be thinking, God, we've gone too far down our own track, really, to be able to learn much from the Finns. But what can the Australian system potentially learn?
Yeah. First of all, I'm very happy if this question is asked seriously, not only here in Australia, but elsewhere. I think we have a great deal to learn from one another. I would mention two or three things. First, I think you have a lot of experience here. You have highly well-educated teachers and principals in the schools. You probably should be better off if you had a more careful eye on what these teachers and schools are saying about the directions of the education reform. Secondly, I think Australia would also benefit from kind of a closer and more open view to the what educational research here and internationally is saying. For example, the OECD is now clearly saying that equity and quality of learning go together. So investing more heavily on those schools that have more needs is a necessary thing. And this is exactly what the Konski report is correctly saying. Thirdly, I think what you can learn from Finland and many other countries performing highly, for example, the province of Alberta in Canada and Korea, is that your thinking of standardized testing is probably not going to take you where you would like to go, meaning that none of these high-performing education systems mentioned are in a path of increasing standardized testing. Canada and England even, and Korea, China, they are all doing away their old standardized testings and replacing them by more intelligent ways of assessment. So I think one lesson for Australia would be probably rethink again what is the role of standardized testing, and could some part of this census-based testing now be replaced by, for example, sample-based assessments like we do in Finland and in other parts of the world now increasingly?
Well, that is a provocative challenge to us in a country that where standardized testing is a big part of the public conversation and the education system. So thank you for giving us that food for thought, and enjoy your trip to Australia.
Thank you so much. Good luck.
Dr. Pasi Sahlberg, the author of Finnish Lessons, What Can the World Learn from Educational Change in Finland? You're with Life Matters here on RN.
If you've ever desired to try your hand at food styling and photography, hello, Michael McKenzie here from RN's new food show, RN First Bite, and we want you to unleash that inner gourmet shutterbug. Simply make a dish, style it, photograph it, and upload the image. There's even prizes to be had. For all the info, look for food styling competition on the RN homepage. At RN First Bite, you eat with your eyes and your ears.
You do indeed. It's a great show. I hope you're catching that. It's actually in the old All in the Mind slot that I used to host on a Saturday afternoon. And of course, All in the Mind will be back later in the year, hosted by my colleague Lynn Malcolm, and that will be on Sundays at 5 o'clock. Let me give you a few Facebook comments that came in overnight in response to and in anticipation of our Finnish education story. Mary Rafferty wrote, We'll be looking forward to this topic. Two grandkids in year one at different schools. One has homework from day one and is totally stressed out by it. The other has no homework and is quite happy. Do not believe in homework till year four or five in preparation for high school. Thanks for that, Mary. I think I'd love to hear your comments on that one, and we might follow up on the show. What do you think about homework? What do you think about the Finnish system that's not giving homework until kids are well into their teens? Very interesting indeed. And also Danielle on our Facebook page writes, when are we going to stop comparing multicultural Australia with all its diversity of backgrounds, language skills, family support layers and tyranny of distance to homogenous, tiny, you'd better learn a foreign language because no one out there is speaking yours. It's dark half the time, so kids might as well do homework. Finland. I think that's a great comment. So looking forward to your continuing comments on our Facebook page or on our website, abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters.